Yeah. So, yeah, this is the official WGN radio show of Jethro Tull. Evidently.
You didn't know they bought the station?
I wasn't aware that, I wasn't aware that Jethro Tull was a regular part of the Nick DiGilio show.
It's the JTN network now.
Doesn't bother me at all. That's our first of Triple Play Thursday, so we got two more Tull songs to listen to, which I'm happy about. Mike requested some Tull, man, on Triple Play Thursday. So, you can send in your request now. Text him 312-981-7200, and Dan will play it. Triple Play Thursday, our first artist, Tull. I saw Jethro Tull many times. One time at the Chicago Stadium, and I believe this was in 1976 or 77, somebody whipped a bottle on stage and almost hit Ian Anderson in the bottle, like shattered on stage. And so Ian Anderson goes, we're not going to play until that, and then he said something dirty, gets thrown out. And so the spotlight guy put the spotlight in the balcony, and the guy was standing up screaming and like giving the finger and yelling. And within 30 seconds of the spotlight hitting the guy, 27 guys jumped on him and beat the hell out of him. Drunk, long-haired, high T-shirt-wearing 1977 lunatics beat the hell out of this guy. Like, they dragged him down the stairs, they beat the crap out of him, they threw him through the entrance, and then the spotlight gets off of him, goes back on stage, and everybody starts cheering, and then Tull starts playing again. I have no idea why this guy would throw a bottle from the balcony at Ian Anderson. You know, presumably the guy paid his, at that time, I think it was like $6.50 to see a concert. So I think he paid his $6.50. Why would he throw a bottle? Of course, it was the 70s. The guy was probably on acid. And all you had to do was inhale, or all you had to do was simply breathe inside the Chicago Stadium, and you'd get high. Do you people like to get high? Paul Stanley. So, anyway, Jethro Tull, Triple Play Thursday, 312-981-7200. Okay, if anybody knows any funny stories about the inspirations or the stories behind songs, famous songs, 312-981-7200. If you have any famous favorite stories, I've got a bunch of behind-the-scenes stories of songs and some women who inspired some classic love songs and what the stories are behind that. And if you have any of your favorites or rumors that you've heard about the stories behind famous songs, 312-981-7200, talk and text. One of my favorites is, of course, who was the inspiration for Alanis Morissette's You Ought to Know, which is, you know, obviously one of the most bitter, like, angry breakup songs, you know, of all time. And we all know who it's inspired by, right? You know Esmeralda, right?
Dave Coulier.
That's right, Dave Coulier. Uncle Lippy, or whatever his name. What was his name?
Joey.
And he was like a real uncle, right? It was Stamos who wasn't related.
No, I thought it was the
No, that's guy. Right. He wasn't related. He lived in the basement. Yeah. Child Protective Services should have been called to that place. You know? You get some dude living in the basement, Uncle Joey. Hey, kids, come on down here. Uncle Joey's got some candy.
Why does your Uncle Joey sound like the same guy trying to pick up Esmeralda?
Hey, if you were a booger, I'd pick you. I'm Uncle Joey.
Hey, Esmeralda, how much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck would chuck wood?
Is that a Full House thing?
That was what he used to say, yeah.
Cut it out.
Dave Coulier. So Dave Coulier inspired that much passion.
I find that so hard to believe.
Oh, absolutely. That's why it's one of the funniest like stories about who inspired a song ever.
I wonder when his spirit broke. Just because, I mean, it just seems like something happened to him.
Is he in Let's Get More House, the thing on Netflix? Is he on that one?
Yeah, I think so.
Is he?
He appeared in the first episode.
Oh, he did.
But he's got a successful Vegas show, I believe, so he had to go back.
What?
He's not in the basement anymore going, come here, twins.
Oh, in the show.
Yeah, in the show.
Oh, okay. Because I was like, what? In real life?
You know,
huh?
A couple of friends of mine went out to L.A. This was back when the factory, there were times when the factory was being courted by HBO for the Aspen Comedy Festival. And they came out to see some of our shows. They sent in people from HBO to come see a few of our shows. And then for the auditions, there was one time that actually one of the shows got picked up and certain people got picked out to go to L.A. to audition. And so like three or four of our factory brethren went out there. This was in the mid-90s. Okay, so Full House was like, you know, at that time it was a monster show, right? It was the mid-90s when that show was big. So my four idiot friends from the factory, they get flown out there. They fly out to this thing. They're going to do an audition for the HBO people. And they happen to be, they use the studio where they tape Full House. So they come back with some, you know, they come back with stories. Oh, it was like the audition went well. It was good and blah, blah, blah. And then one of my friends was, he had like a backpack with him. This was, they'd gotten back a few days earlier from LA. They were back in Chicago and we were at the theater. And I don't know if we were there for a rehearsal or a board meeting or whatever. And he comes in, he's got a backpack and he goes, I brought a souvenir back from LA. And we're like, oh, okay, cool. What is it? And he unzips his backpack and he pulls out Dave Coulier's nameplate from his dressing room door. He stole it. I got Dave Coulier's nameplate from his dressing room door. I stole it from the set of Full House. And so that nameplate, the Dave Coulier nameplate, was in our green room at the Factory Theater for like 6 years. I don't know who's got it now, but we had it. At one point, we had it behind the counter. We actually hung it behind the counter where you would buy tickets. There was Dave Coulier's nameplate stolen from the Full House set. And everybody went nuts. We were all like, yeah, man, Dave Coulier's nameplate. Stolen from the set. From his dressing room door. And I could see him showing up like the next day. Where the hell's my nameplate? That was a good Dave Coulier, wasn't it?
Amazing.
I have no idea what he sounds like. Doesn't he do impressions, though? Wasn't one of his gigs, he was like an impressionist, right?
Yes,
was he?
He did do the occasional impression.
Did he do impressions on Call the Police? Because this house is unsafe?
Yes, when he was trying to cheer up the girls in a non-creepy way after a hard day, sometime he'd bust out an impression or two.
What, did he do anybody famous?
I want to say I remember him doing Carson.
Carson? Did he go wild, weird stuff?
Probably. And then he swung a golf club.
He apparently did the Muppet Babies, like the voices for some of them.
Oh, you mean for real?
Right.
Like on the Muppet Baby show.
Yeah.
Dave Coulier did voices.
So he did some. He just seems like a big, like, lame-o.
Yeah, he does. But he wanted oral sex in a theater, according to Alanis Morissette.
Oh, Alanis.
He enjoyed being in a theater and having oral sex. If you were to listen to that song.
Gross.
Okay. Well, we'll take a break. Dave Coulier, we love him. All right, more stories behind songs. If you've got any, 312-981-7200. Yeah. Bore, man. Instrumental Tull. Mike requested Jethro Tull for Triple Play Thursday. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And if you want to squeeze in a request for Triple Play Thursday, do it now, 312-981-7200. We are talking about famous stories behind some songs and who inspired some songs. Now, one of the songs that is part of this list is a song that I have called in the past many times a perfect song. There are certain songs that exist and they are perfect. There is nothing wrong with them. One of them is Bonnie Raitt's I Can't Make You Love Me, which is one of my favorite songs of all time. I didn't really know the story behind that song, but there is a story other than it being like the saddest song ever. And one of the, like the greatest breakup song of all time and beautiful in every possible way and perfect. I just didn't know the story, but here's the story behind I Can't Make You Love Me by Bonnie Raitt. The song was inspired by a man who was in court for shooting at his girlfriend's car. The judge asked the man if he had learned anything, and the man replied, "I learned, Your Honor, that you can't make a woman love you if she don't." Another interesting note, the song was written by former NFL lineman Mike Reed, who was the number 7 draft pick in 1970. Does Rick Geezer know this?
I thought the same thing.
Wow, I didn't. A former NFL lineman wrote that song? A former NFL lineman wrote one of the most perfect and sad songs of all time? Between seasons, he was a pianist for various respected symphony orchestras across the U.S. He won a Grammy for writing a country song in 1984, making him the only NFL player to do so ever. Geezer's got to know this, right?
You'd imagine.
He's got to. Next time we have him in, make sure he brings in some Mike Reed. He's my hero. So it's inspired by a guy who shot at his girlfriend's car and then said, "I learned, Your Honor, that you can't make a woman love you if she don't." Wow. Did you guys know that?
Was unaware.
Isn't that
crazy? No clue.
That's crazy. How about the Drifters, "Save the Last Dance for Me"? You remember "Save the Last Dance for Me"? The song was written by polio stricken Doc, who scribbled them down at his own wedding, watching a line of able bodied men dance with his bride, who was a Broadway dancer. These are sad stories. What's going on here? So do we have "Save the Last Dance for Me" by the Drifters? And that's just going to be.
"So darling, save the last dance for me. Oh, I know.
Oh, I know.
Let the music's fine like sparkling wine. Go and have your fun.
Oh, I know.
Laugh and sing.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. But while we're apart, don't give your heart to anyone.
Wow.
But don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be. So darling, say the last."
This is now. This is a whole. I'm looking at this song in an entirely different way now. Do you know what I mean? You know what I mean? This song is complete.
Because I mean, that gets plays at weddings and like.
Yeah.
Like that.
It does. It's like, oh, it's nice. It's a nice little song. My God. My mind has been blown right here. Jeez, man. Wow. Okay. How about Cream's White Room? All right. Here's the thing. That song makes no sense at all. White Room. No, you know, Cream, almost all of their songs were like just weird. Like the lyrics didn't make any sense. They were jams because Cream rules. But if you're trying to look for some sort of inspiration or logic in any of the lyrics, you're trying to figure out what Cream songs are about. That is a monumental waste of time. So what do they say about White Room? "Many people try to find the deep, deep hidden meaning in its mysterious lyrics, White Room. In the white room with black curtains near the station. Per writer Pete Brown, it was me writing a monologue about my new flat."
"In the white room with black curtains near the station. Black roof country, no gold payments, tired starlings."
Some tired birds.
"Silver
What the hell does that mean?
Maybe he has statues. Horse statues.
That must be a hell of a flat right there. That must have some crazy stuff going on in that apartment.
Well, by the time they did White Room, how much money do you think they had?
They were doing okay.
So yeah, he could have those horses. I mean, fake
in
horses.
In his flat?
Fake horses.
Didn't you just see a movie where there was horses in an apartment?
Yeah, high rise. Jeremy Irons' wife has horses in their penthouse apartment.
Oh, also, there's a place on Chicago where it's like this hoity-toity lighting place, and up on the roof they have a deck roof or whatever. There's a big old it's a lamp, but it's a big horse with like something on its head, and it's supposed to light up. So you could have that. It's a horse lamp.
It's a horse lamp. My favorite horse. You know what my favorite horse is? Mr. Horse from Ren and Stimpy. Nope. No, sir. Don't like it at all.
What was your favorite horse back in your equestrian days?
I don't want to go through this anymore.
Oh, that's right. I always forget about that.
I just get mocked.
Little Nick DiGilio.
Did you ever wear a red coat and a hat?
Yes.
Oh.
And I had the crop.
Little riding crop.
And the boots. Yes.
You'd be like, yeah, yeah.
I used to jump horses, man.
Come on, Buttercup.
There was no Buttercup. There was a Thunderbolt. I rode a horse called Thunderbolt.
And you gave it a little salt lick. Gave it some hay.
All right.
Imagine a young Nick DiGilio.
It's real,
shirt
though.
A little too big. Shorts. Skinny legs. Soon to be the star of Wildcats. Reaching into his pocket. Handing a salt lick. To Buttercup.
Buttercup. There was no Buttercup.
Okay, Thunderbolt.
Much more manly. Thunderbolt. Right.
You know, it's funny because I love doing that. I was like did like the equestrian arts at a very young age, but it's really funny because like I was riding horses around Norwich. That's the thing that's like it's not like I was out on the plains somewhere. Not like I was in Montana, you know.
Where you're like, "Mummy,
you don't say that in Norwich.
I want some candy later." Yeah.
Mumsy poo.
Thunderbolt was quite randy today.
Oh, man. I'm sorry I ever brought that up.
We're not.
Yeah.
No, I know. I don't know what to tell you.
You should go let out all your aggression riding a horse.
Well, it is a good way to let out aggression.
With your equestrian arts.
As, you know, it's a good way to let out aggression. And again, as I've said before, if you think you've gone horseback riding on those trails where the horses are like, why am I here? And you're just kind of like following the other horse. That's not horseback riding. You have never gone horseback riding if you think that's what that is. We're going to go on the trail. These horses are like, oh, God, get off my back. Why do I have to have my nose in this other horse's butt? And we're just walking slowly. That's not horseback riding. All right. Thank you for bringing that up. I appreciate that.
No problem.
Yeah, I appreciate that very much. All right, we got a break and more stories behind the songs. If you have any, 312-981-7200. Again, the best ever. Dave Coulier inspired You Ought to Know by Alanis Morissette. That, I think, is maybe the greatest behind-the-scenes story of a song. If you've got any, 312-981-7200. Song is a jam. One of my favorite Tull songs of all time. Mike, nice job, man, on Triple Play Thursday. New Day Yesterday by Tull. Jam. Yeah, man. Triple Play Thursday. Hey, all our regular features on the Friday morning show, if you want to be a part of it, it's really easy. We do a thing called You Big Dummy, and that's where we read all the true news stories of the week where people do really dumb stuff. If you would like to read one of those on the air, find a link to a funny dummy story. Contact Dan. Send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Say, I'd like to read that on the air. We'll set it up. You'll read it on the air. And you will also get some Lou Malnati's pizza. Also, straight out of context, that's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever anybody says anything that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle like a 9-year-old, jot down the day, the time, who said it, send it to nickdshow@gmail.com, and we'll play the dirty little straight out of contexts. And, of course, Nick D Show Spies. That's when you listen 24/7. And whenever anybody at any time mentions me or the show in any capacity, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. We'll play that all that stuff back tomorrow morning on the show. All right. So stories about songs. Let's see. Did you know And I Love Her by the Beatles is dedicated to Jane Asher? McCartney wrote And I Love Her in 1964, called it the first ballad I impressed myself with. By 1967, he and the English actress were engaged, but a year later they went their separate ways. I think Jane Asher is actually responsible for a couple of songs that McCartney wrote in that time period. Long married to illustrator Gerald Scarfe, Asher has become an entrepreneur. She designed her London shop, Jane Asher Party Cakes. You know who Gerald Scarfe is? Dan, do you know who Gerald Scarfe is? The illustrator?
Can't say that I do.
He did all the illustrations and the animation for The Wall, for Pink Floyd The Wall. That's Gerald Scarfe. I did not know that he was married to Jane Asher. I didn't know that. So Jane Asher inspired And I Love Her. All right. You guys know the story behind Smoke on the Water? Only the most recognizable rock riff in music history, and always the first song that everybody learns on guitar. It's the first song I learned on guitar. One of the greatest riffs ever. It is a true story. The song came about when the band was at a Frank Zappa concert in Switzerland. Someone in the audience shot a Roman candle into the ceiling mid-show, causing a massive fire. There were no injuries, but the building burned down to the ground as the members of Deep Purple sat in a nearby hotel room while firefighters tried to thwart the flames. They noticed Lake Geneva was completely engulfed in a haze. See that? And you can see it. One of the lyrics, I can't remember, is "Some stupid weather flare gun, burn the place to the ground now. Smoke on the water, a fire in the sky." So some stupid with a flare gun burned the place to the ground. You can see these guys like, wow, man, look at all that smoke.
And it's on the water.
It's on the water, man. Go get some more weed.
There's some fire in the sky.
I need more weed. What a jam.
I'm starting to think I could write a song. I mean, you just have to write about what's going on at that very moment.
Yeah, that's it, man.
All right, then.
Some stupid with a flare gun burned the place to the ground. That's a number one hit.
A boy and his buttercup.
Knock it off. Although Buttercup is the name of my favorite Powerpuff Girl. I will say that.
And horse.
Is that why she's your favorite?
Yeah, that's why. Because it's my horse. It was my horse's name that I gave a salt lick to with my English accent and my proper gown.
A texter says that you would be giving her a sugar cube, right?
It would be a sugar cube. No, but you guys said salt lick, not me.
I don't know. Don't think
we're not equestrian artists like you.
You should have corrected us.
I'm not going to correct anything. You could say that horses can fly, and I would go, yes, they can.
Some can. Pegasus.
Yeah, Pegasus is. The dude at the beginning of every movie from TriStar Studios can fly.
You think that's a male? I always thought it was a female.
I don't know.
You should know. You're an equestrian.
I know that the logo for Columbia looks like Annette Bening. That's I know that. I was always convinced that the logo of the woman at the holding the torch at the beginning of the Columbia films. Hey, that's Annette Bening.
It's now the stories behind your favorite studio openings.
Oh man, how about this? Harry Nilsson won. It was performed by the lovely and talented Amy Mann last week when I saw her live. And it is also performed at the beginning of Magnolia, the greatest movie ever made. Harry Nilsson wrote the song One is the Loneliest Number after trying to call someone and getting a busy signal. He stayed on the line and used the signal tone while writing, and that tone became the opening notes of the song. So that... dun, 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 dun.
Oh, he was so lonely.
That's supposed to be a busy signal. It's like, I'm trying to get through to you, but dun, 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 one is the lone. Well, yeah.
Seriously. I'm just going to start writing about the traffic studio.
You should. You might be able to get like a 12-album opus out of that. All right. Interesting. I didn't know that. All right. Well, we got a break here. We got the news coming up, and then we'll do more behind-the-scenes stories of classic songs. And then Esmeralda's going to write it. By the end of the show, Esmeralda will have written two songs.
I will have a 13-album...
13-album concept
right,
album
exactly.
About the traffic room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. All right, we're going to return. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Triple Play Thursday. And 773 requested Steve Goodman, and we just played his worst song. I hate that song so much. When I go to Wrigley and the Cubs win, I can't get out of that place fast enough. People get so mad when I say that. Oh, what do you mean you don't like that song? Because it's stupid. It's a terrible song. I love Steve Goodman. I do. And I know that the next two songs that we hear for Triple Play Thursday of Steve Goodman will be great. That one is not. Oh, man. So that's not a very popular opinion, I know. And I'm a Cub fan. Cub fan my whole life. That song is stupid. All right. Esmeralda, are you curious about Neil Diamond's Sweet Caroline?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Bap, bap, bap.
Yeah. Yep.
For decades, no one knew who Caroline of Neil Diamond's 1969 hit Sweet Caroline was. Nearly 40 years after its release, Diamond finally revealed that he was struck by the innocence of a picture he saw in a magazine while on tour in the 60s. It was a little girl riding a pony.
It wasn't you, was it?
No, it wasn't me.
Okay.
And the girl was Caroline Kennedy. Diamond was able to tell his muse this story when he played the song for her at her 50th birthday party in 2007. So that was little Caroline Kennedy. Wow. How about that? Did you ever see the movie Beautiful Girls?
I've seen bits and pieces.
Timothy Hutton, Michael Rapaport.
Right.
Matt Dillon.
Yeah.
Great movie.
Kirsten Dunst.
No. Was Natalie it? Portman.
Oh.
Portman.
All right.
That's what my friend John used to call that movie.
Portman. All right.
That's on my list of the top five guy movies that every guy should see.
Beautiful Girls?
Yes.
All right.
It's the best guy movies. I have the five best guy movies that it's a requirement for all guys to see. And if they haven't, they need to turn in their man card.
No. Oh. What are they?
In no particular order.
Okay.
They're all the five best guy movies ever made.
Right.
Beautiful Girls.
Uh-huh.
Diner.
Okay.
Breaking Away.
Okay.
Fandango. You don't know what Fandango is, do you?
I haven't heard of any of these movies except Beautiful Girls.
What, seriously?
I haven't heard any, no.
Oh, wait, hold on. You never heard of Diner?
No.
Barry Levinson made it. Mickey Rourke is in it. Paul Reiser. Kevin Bacon.
No.
It's about Baltimore, growing up in Baltimore in the 60s.
Oh, okay.
Great movie.
What's the fifth?
The next one was, that you don't know.
Breaking Away.
Breaking Away.
Right.
You don't know Breaking Away?
No.
Okay. Shot in Indiana, Bloomington, Indiana.
Uh-huh. Okay.
About these local guys, these young dudes who are hanging out. Dennis Christopher, Daniel Stern, Jack Earl Haley, Dennis Quaid, a very young Dennis Quaid. And they are locals. They're called the Cutters because their fathers worked in the quarries,
mm-hmm.
and they cut rocks, so they were called Cutters.
Hmm.
And it's like a battle between them and the college kids who come in because they're townies. And it's also a bike riding movie. It's about riding bikes.
Okay,
that's Breaking Away, Diner, Fandango, which is not a movie that the first three that I've mentioned a lot of people know.
Right.
Fandango is Kevin Costner's first real movie.
Huh.
It from 1984. It's Kevin Costner, Judd Nelson, Sam Bottoms, and they play these guys who go on one last road trip because they got drafted to Vietnam. So they go on one last road trip after they graduate. A couple of them graduate college, and they just go on a road trip to Mexico. Great film. And then fifth is Hanging with the Homeboys, which is a terrible title, but a great movie. Have you ever heard of it?
I've seen you talking about it.
Hanging with the Homeboys is a great movie. A great, great movie. A real unfortunate title. Really terrible title. John Leguizamo is in it. Mario Joyner, Dougie Doug. And it's about four guys who just go out one night. They live in the Bronx and they end up going to Manhattan one night. And that's all it is.
A lot of guys are going to be losing their man cards based on your list.
Well, I mean, these are movies. I'm telling you right now, only Fandango and especially Hanging with the Homeboys people haven't seen. The other three, Diner and Breaking Away, are classics. They're like legendary, you know. But anyway, those are the five.
Okay.
Hanging with the Homeboys is a really great movie. I remember the first time I saw it, my expectations were so unbelievably low. Because, like... The poster for it was the four guys just like, yeah, and they're like on a stoop in New York.
Mm-hmm. Just hanging.
There's like graffiti on the walls, and the movie came out in 1991. So it was like, you know, right when hip hop was, you know, it was like Public Enemy was releasing stuff like Can't Trust It, and you know, that was like what was going on. Boys in the Hood had come out that year. So the hip hop rap culture was in the movies.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was called Hanging with the Homeboys, and it does have no G. It's an exclamation. It's the
of course.
Hanging with an apostrophe. But I remember seeing the poster for it, the first time I ever saw a poster for it, and it's just them, and the tagline was, "It's Friday. What are you doing?" That was it. That was how they described it. I'm like, what this movie turns out to be, this rich and really poignant and very funny film. That is accurate in terms of how guy friends act and also really revealing about ethnicity, because there's a Puerto Rican guy who's pretending to be Italian because he doesn't want to be Puerto Rican. So they call him Vinny because he wants to pass for Italian.
Yeah, yeah.
John Leguizamo is in it.
Interesting.
And it's a really, really great movie. Yeah. The guy who wrote and directed it, it passed away. He died of AIDS like a year after the movie came out, and he never got to make another movie.
Oh, wow.
Joseph Vasquez is his name. It's a great movie, a really, really great movie. Fandango is great too. It's the best performance Kevin Costner's ever given.
Oh no,
I'm not kidding.
Even Waterworld.
Well, don't get crazy now. You
All
know
right.
Waterworld rules.
Okay.
So anyway, but they use Sweet Caroline. The reason this came up, they use Sweet Caroline and Beautiful Girls. You remember they sing it in the bar?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, because Uma Thurman comes in and buys them all a round of shots, and they convince Timothy Hutton, who's a pianist, to play some music, and he starts playing Sweet Caroline, and they all sing along. So, all right, how about this? Do you know the song Back in December by Taylor Swift?
Maybe.
Dan, do you know the song? I should ask Dan.
Yeah.
Do you know the song Back in December by Taylor Swift?
No, maybe I don't. What's the title again?
Back in December.
Now, is this the Country Days?
One.
This says that Back in December by Taylor Swift was written as an apology to Taylor Lautner. Because they dated.
Yeah.
Because I remember when she hosted Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, they did. She did a whole little.
She did a little song at the beginning.
About Taylor. And
referenced Taylor Lautner. So Now,
well, that's nice.
Yeah,
that's nice. Just she's apologizing,
but she gives a shout out to Kanye at the end because that was after the MTV thing, and like she says something like,
"Was that also back in December?"
Well, no, but like she says something like, you know, even though you're 30 years old, you're not necessarily grown up or something. It was like kind of a.
So she dissed Kanye?
No, she was kind of like saying like, "Hey, man, stuff happens."
She's just lumping everything together.
Okay.
She can only write so many songs.
Well, she, and there's, you know, every song is about a different guy, right?
Right. So, you know, she's got to throw
but
some
But she
stuff.
Apologizes. No, she doesn't apologize. Usually she's like bitching about guys who dumped
right,
her, right?
Yeah. So this was, that's nice. She knows she can apologize.
You know, Taylor Swift, I got to say, I didn't know her from Adam when she hosted SNL. At that time, she was just like country. Chick.
Right, she's
she didn't cross over
she
become
that, you know, that new country,
the new cute
pop.
Country pop thing.
Right.
So I didn't know what the hell was going on. The first time I saw her on SNL after her monologue, when she did the monologue song, I loved her. And I thought she was great on SNL. She was very, very funny. I didn't care about the song she performed,
mm-hmm.
except for the monologue song at the beginning. Yeah, Dan, you think you'd find the monologue song that Taylor Swift performed. Now, I obviously had heard of her.
Right.
And she was nowhere near as massive as she is now. I mean,
yeah.
You know. But so she just came out and she was like, I don't know, she was probably like 18, 17 at that time. Didn't she start out? She was a teenager, fairly young,
yeah.
So she was still like 18 maybe or something.
Yeah, I would say.
And I'm like, I'm being real cynical about it. You know, and I'm like, I don't know who this is. And, you know. And sometimes when you have a musical guest be both the host and the musical guest, that could be, sometimes it's a disaster.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was bracing for nonsense. And then she does this monologue song, and I was like, oh, she's adorable. Do we have it, Dan?
We do have it, but it's long. So
oh, it's long. Oh, and it's already 4:45, so we have to take a break here and do some weather and some traffic. I do want to mention this real quick. Billy Joel's Uptown Girl, it says here it was written about Elle McPherson. That's not true. It was written about Christie Brinkley. She's even in the video. Right?
I mean, that's who's in the video.
But they were married, Christie Brinkley and Billy Joel.
I don't know. Maybe he had a thing with Elle.
He had a thing with Elle McPherson and put his wife.
Because she was long gone. I mean, how could you imagine be like, hey, I wrote this about Elle. So she's going to have to be in the video?
Yeah.
Sorry, Christy.
I think that's wrong. We might want to look into that. All right.
I'm the train they call the city of New Orleans. And I'll be going 500 miles when the day is done.
You see the difference between this song
and, I was dealing cards
and Go Cubs
the
Go?
Men in the club
There's a huge car. Difference between this Steve Goodman and the Steve Goodman that recorded that stupid Go Cubs Go song.
Right. How many years is this, like, between them? Between the two?
Probably.
Because what? The Go Cubs Go is what, 80s?
80s, yeah.
And then this was, what do you think?
70s.
Yeah, well, there's that, too.
Yeah, yeah. And 773 area code requested some Steve Goodman for Triple Play Thursday. So, we were talking about this Taylor Swift song back in December,
mm-hmm.
which was an apology to... we weren't talking about a Taylor Swift song in December. We were talking about a song called Back in December.
Yes.
That Taylor Swift wrote as an apology to Taylor Lautner.
Which, I knew that wasn't going to last. You can't be with someone with your same name.
I dated a Nikki.
Yeah, well, where is she now?
Poof.
She's still here?
No.
There you go.
That's not, but that's just, it doesn't matter what women's names are when they date me. They're gone at some point.
But it's just weird. Like, I couldn't date someone if I had a name.
Didn't you date a Danielle?
I did date a Danielle.
There's
yes.
gotta be, I don't know.
Have you ever met a man named Merle?
I've never met, no.
Merle. You could have dated Merle Haggard.
I could. Yep.
Sounds like a match made in heaven.
Such a May December romance.
Back in December. See how it all. Do you have the monologue song?
I like glitter and sparkly dresses, but I'm not going to talk about that in my monologue. I like baking and things that smell like winter, but I'm not going to talk about that in my monologue. La la la.
cheat on me, but I'm not gonna say that. In my monologue, I like writing their names into songs so they're ashamed to go in public, but I'm not gonna say that. In my monologue. On monologue. You might think I'd bring up Joe, that guy who broke up with me on the phone, but I'm not gonna mention him. In my monologue. Hey Joe, I'm doing real well. Tonight I'm posting it. And if you're wondering if I might be dating the werewolf from Twilight. I'm not gonna comment on that. In my monologue. La la, la 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 la. This is my musical monologue. You might be expecting me to say something bad about Kanye and how he ran up on the stage and ruined my VMA monologue. But there's nothing more to say, 'cause everything's okay. I've got security lining the stage.
Lovely.
It sounds very Adam Sandler.
Just, it was lovely. And then, by the way, she does, like, blow a kiss and say hi, like, she lips hi, Taylor.
Right.
And when she says, I got security, it's, like, a Hater, and who's the other guy that comes up? Hater and somebody else comes up, and they're wearing, they've got earpieces and sunglasses, and they have, like, sketches of Kanye. So,
that's cute.
It was right after that I was like, you know, I like this Taylor Swift. She's all right. All right, so Dan, you looked up this. It says here that "Uptown Girl" by Billy Joel was written about Elle Macpherson, and
According to numerous reports, the song was conceived on an occasion when Billy Joel was hanging out with Whitney Houston, Christie Brinkley, and then girlfriend Elle Macpherson.
Oh, see.
According to Joel, the song was initially written about his relationship with Macpherson, but it ended up also becoming about his soon-to-be wife Brinkley.
Because he was going to marry Brinkley and not Elle, so he has to put her in the video.
Let me ask you a question. How does Billy Joel land those two women?
Because he's Billy Joel. He plays piano and he's famous.
That's it.
If he was just a schmo who played piano, he would not.
Elle Macpherson. I didn't know that Billy Joel dated Elle Macpherson. What?
Yeah. Are they still together? No,
who?
Right?
Christie Brinkley? No.
Yeah. And...
No. He's been married 43 times.
Oh yeah, he's isn't
he likes to drive around Long Island and drive into houses. That's what he's been doing, I think, for the past 10 years. He drives around Long Island and crashes into houses.
Wow. That's quite a hobby.
That's what he does. There's a really funny episode when Lindsay Lohan hosted SNL. They did a bit where they were at a party on Long Island, and they get a ride from Billy Joel, and Billy Joel is played by Horatio Sanz. And it's just him crashing the car into mailboxes and stuff. It's hilarious, if you can find it. It's the first time that the Lohan hosted SNL. So Steve Grzanich is out today, right? So it's Matt Bubala. So we'll quickly say hello to Matt Bubala. Hey, Matt.
What's up, Nick D?
Hey.
But really, you hate that much on that Steve Goodman song, huh?
I hate
it. Was written for your radio station.
I know exactly what it was written for.
Man,
I know.
You can't have just a cheesy little love letter to something. You gotta have. I don't know. Come on, dude.
No, hate it.
Always hated it, or did you turn on it at some point?
Always hated it from the moment I heard it. And like I said, every time they win, I go to Wrigley. I can't get out of there fast enough. I can't. So
you can't stay and enjoy a win. You can relax for a minute if they lose. That's such a sad little statement.
Yeah.
That's so,
I mean, I enjoy the win. Yeah. I just don't. But it's ruined by that song. So what's coming up?
But I got to say, Nick, as you were talking about it, I was thinking to myself, what a simpler time in the world when Billy Joel could be courting both Christie Brinkley and Elle McPherson.
It's unbelievable, man. It's unbelievable.
It really is. What happened? How did that happen? Do you think those two ever get together and go, what were we on at that time?
Exactly. Why the hell were we with Billy Joel?
Poor Billy.
Wow.
We've got a lot coming up on the opening bell this morning. McDonald's and Wendy's, I think we've both seen a lot of this on social media lately. People complaining about Wendy's and McDonald's maybe getting away from the average worker and getting more kiosks and things like that. We'll talk a little bit about that. A story about your business plan. If your business plan can't fit on the back of an envelope, might be a bad business plan. We'll talk about that. And Hewlett-Packard Enterprise is making a $100 million bet on startups. We'll do all that, cover yesterday's market stuff, and get you prepared for today as well, all on the opening bell.
All right. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Have a good day, buddy. Okay.
I have to jump in.
Yeah.
July 4th. 2015, Billy Joel married his fourth wife, Alexis Roderick, age 33 at the time, a former Morgan Stanley executive and an equestrian artist.
Oh, don't let her meet Nick. You'll find your own uptown girl.
I swear to God, I so regret ever telling anyone that I used to ride horses.
Yeah,
I swear to God.
Yeah, you shouldn't have said anything.
She's 37 years old, by the way. Billy Joel is 82.
Yeah.
He's 82 years old.
I remember he was dating. Yeah. She's really young.
Yeah.
For him.
Yeah. She's young for me, and I'm 50. All right. Esmeralda, we'll see you tomorrow. Fly Jams Friday.
Oh, yeah.
Heart Melda.
Yep.
All right. We'll take a break. We got the news next, and then Matt Bubala in for Steve Grzanich in the opening bell.